In the past few years, I became a little bit familiar with the so-called ultra-dispensationalist view of the Bible, and particularly wondering about baptism, since you were talking about that this morning. And from what I understand, that view holds that Paul had a new gospel, basically, that was a new mysterious revelation to him only, and baptism is no longer required for believers. So I'm wondering, given the message this morning, if you see an error in that, which I assume you do, where does the error lie?
Thank you. So Danny, what did you say?
Daniel.
Daniel asked about hyper-dispensationalism, or he called it ultra-dispensationalism, both terms. Or it could be, there's another form of it called Acts 9 dispensationalism. And he asked about whether I saw any errors in that, and especially in light of talking about baptism this morning. Ultra-dispensationalism and hyper-dispensationalism is a lot like what is called hyper-Calvinism. In fact, I was having lunch this afternoon with some people, and it was really, you know, every time I go out to eat anywhere in Kalamazoo, I can only eat half time. I'm looking the rest of the time, because there are always Calvary people there, and people always check to see if I recognize them, and at least 10 or 12 people at the place I was check to see if I recognized them. You know, what they do is they go... In fact, yesterday I was standing at a monument here in Kalamazoo. I'd just come home, just got out of the airport, and I was at Water Street, and I was just wearing my typical travel gear, I was in the line at Water Street, and two or three people in front of me was someone from Calvary. I knew they were from Calvary. You know, I do see quite, I can still see even though I can't hear very well, but I recognized them, but I didn't want to bother them. They were quite talking, and finally they said to the person next to them, "That's our pastor, and he's undercover right now, so we can't." And so I said, "I'm not undercover." You know, I said, "Hello." And so she proceeded to introduce me to all the people in the line, and it was really sweet. And ultra-dispensationalism, hyper-dispensationalism, at lunch we were talking about the hyper-Calvinism part. What this teaches is that the New Testament church doesn't start until after the conversion. That's where this Acts 9, after the conversion of after Paul is converted, that's when the New Testament church starts. And what they say prior to that is Old Testament. And so what that would mean is that Christ in Matthew 28 instituting baptism, that's in the Old Testament. That's prior to the New Testament church. That's kind of in the pre-church times. Communion is put in there too, by the way, in some senses, even though Paul does talk about communion. There are even extreme forms which they have trouble not only with baptism but with communion. But just classic Acts 9 hyper-dispensationalism is just what it's called. It's hyper-dispensationalism. And what they say is that the church started after Paul, and what's fascinating about it is that, so does that mean James, who is even more Old Testament-y than anything else you can think of, is that not in the church? And also, how would you place, you know, the earlier epistles? And so basically, to answer Danny's question, hyper-dispensationalism, and just for an example of a person, what's his name? The guy that works with Bullinger, it would be an example of this. If you've ever heard of Bullinger, and Bullingerism. He's an author, a very good one, by the way. They are just people that over... Now here, just let me show... You know what the dispensations are, right? How many of you could say the seven dispensations right now? Hold them high. Okay, put them down. How many of you could not, for your life, say the seven dispensations? That's really sad, because Calvary is a dispensational church. But basically, a dispensational church, what they say is that there's, and by the way, I don't know if I could even say them, creation, conscience, come on, law, there we go. And kingdom. Who said that? Dale, you're amazing. Yeah, what I mean, amazing. I appreciate that. You're not only a physicist, but you're a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. What? I have law twice. Innocence, there we go. And that goes up here. No, it wasn't Dale, it was me. Okay, basically what dispensations are is saying that in the continuum of history, in the Garden of Eden, we had innocence. After the fall, we had conscience. Then by the time we get to Genesis 10, we have Genesis 9, we have human government. So right here is Genesis 9, human government. And then by the time, law is in Exodus, you know, we get law. What is this promise? Abraham. Oh, Abraham, so it's before. There we go. So we have promise. That's how God dealt during the time of... So basically, during Abraham's time, God looked like this. During Noah's time, God looked at people like this. During the pre-fall, he looked at them this way. And after Adam and Eve fell into sin, he looked at them this way. Abraham. And then we have Moses, and we have law. And by the way, dispensation, oiko, the Greek word is oiko. The word dispensationism, nomia. This is law, and oikos is house. So kind of like house rules. When you're at my house, you take your shoes off. You know what I mean? Something like that. You don't at my house, but you should. So the house rules for how God treated the people that and how he related to them. And then after, so this is Abraham, Moses, grace is... you know, the law, as John says, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. So it's the time of Christ. Grace and the church is here. And then the kingdom is talking about the 1,000-year millennial kingdom. Now, what's fascinating, so this is dispensationalism, 7 dispensations looking at the unfolding revelation of God. They only had, you know, what he said, and then they only had what he said and what he promised, and then with what he wrote, you know, with Moses, and then he had all of, you know, righteousness revealed in Christ, and then there's all those kingdom promises. So it's trying to sort out all the different, you know, like the promises that God made to Abraham about a land, and that has to do with Israel, and with Moses had to do with the children of Israel. So there are parts that are ceremonial, and there's parts that are actually his character. And then, of course, the church. But when the church is taken out of this world, God reverts to, and that's really fascinating because he does. In Ezekiel 40 to 48, God goes back to animal sacrifices in the millennial temple. And that's sorting all that out. But what's interesting, I'll just show you this. Don't give up here. Be patient. And something interesting, there are 2 branches of theologies. There's covenant theology, and then there's dispensational theology. What I just showed you just now is the 7 dispensations. Covenant theology just has 2. What are they? Doug, what is it? Something and something? Works, and then the covenant of? Okay, there we go. Oh, there's 3?
Yeah. There's the covenant of redemption, which was between the Trinity before creation.
But I mean just simple covenant theology.
Covenant of works and then the covenant of grace. Okay,
there we go. So thanks. Old Testament, New Testament. But what's fascinating is, so it's covenant theology has the covenant of works and the covenant of grace. And the covenant of grace, actually, even within... They go, there's something before, what do they call it before? It's too complicated, Doug, so don't tell me because I'll get mixed up. But this is covenant theology. Basically, what they say is that God started with Israel back here, But then when Israel, when they sinned, he said no, and he replaced them with the church. And so basically all of the promises God made to Israel now apply to the church. Now, within covenant theology, though, they have two covenants, but they have subsets, as many as seven, depending on whether you read Burkhoff or whether you read Hodge, these different Murray. They have different ways God deals within a covenant. Now, what's interesting is they have two covenants and seven subsets. The dispensationalists just have seven subsets. Now, back to hyper. What the hyper ones do is they have the Old Testament, then they have this in-between time when Jesus, in fact, see, with these people, they would say, the hyper ones, and then Acts 9 starts the church. So here's the church, here's this in-between thing, and here's the Old Testament. Here, they would say that Matthew 5 through 7 has nothing to do with us. This is kingdom stuff for Israel. And Christ, in fact, they would get a little troubled with when I talk about Matthew 7, Lord, Lord, they say, oh, no, that's not in this. And what I say, and to answer Danny's question, just a simple answer, to go back to whatever your question was, I would say that this is an artificial distinction, that Jesus Christ came. He was the promised one that would come. Grace and truth met in him, and he came to save his people from their sins, and he came to institute the new covenant promises to give it to the church, to ratify the new covenant through his blood, Ezekiel 36:26-27, and to offer to his church. To artificially put a line, say, Matthew 1 to Acts 8 isn't in the church, isn't a distinction that the New Testament gives. It is really an artificial one. But also, I'm as dispensational as you get, but you have to be very careful about two. The Bible does not list seven dispensations. We find them. We perceive them. There's not a listing. The word oikonomia doesn't say, and there are seven. And by the way, I mean, I don't want to scare anybody, but this is not in the Bible either. You know what I'm doing? I'm doing a Hal Lindsey chart. Millennium. There is no chart like this in the Bible. It doesn't mean these things aren't true. The Bible didn't come with charts that have, the cross is here, and this is the church age, and then the rapture is here, and this is the mid-tribulation, and this is the post-tribulation, or, the second half of the tribulation. Then there's the 1260 days. All of those components are in the Bible, but it doesn't give a chart. And we have to be especially cautious with our prophecy charts, with our dispensational charts, and with our, the hyper people charts and the covenant theology charts. The Bible is not written as a systematic theology. It doesn't have an index and a topic glossary. It was written as a complete unit in a book. And we are supposed to, and I'll just close with this because I can get in trouble if I talk too much. If you want to know the underlying principle I have for all of these questions, it's Acts 17:11, and that is that no matter who's teaching you, even if it's your most revered teacher, I mean, whoever it might be, Swindoll, MacArthur, Piper, Calvin himself, or Luther. We should do what the Bereans did, and the Bereans checked Paul out. Here he was, an inspired writer, and they checked what he said against the Old Testament, which were the scriptures they had, and they saw whether or not what he taught had any conflict. Because God is a God of order. And God is a God who doesn't lie, and God doesn't change. And if something he revealed that is truth here is still truth, and they wanted to make sure that Paul was not out of line. And so for all of us, whether we're, you know, there are some people that are really hung up on the covenant theology. Some are hung up on the dispensational theology. By the way, the essence, if you want to know why Calvary is a dispensational church, it's because we see a difference between the church. God's purposes for the church are not the same as his purposes for Israel. And that God, the church has a beginning point and an ending point for its work on earth. So here's the primary difference. For earthly ministry, the church here, Israel has a beginning point and an ending point, but it goes far beyond that of the church because it goes all the way through into the millennium. And they are not equal in their plans for the earth. Israel has physical promises and covenants and land and blessings, and also it's an ethnic. It has to be a physical descendant. Israel is a physical descendant of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And so there's so many physical and promises and future promises and everything else. For the church, it is spiritual. And anybody from Israel, by the way, that gets saved, they become a part of the church when they get saved. But ethnically, their relatives still have a future and a hope and a promise. And so what, this is real simplistic, but dispensationalism sees a difference here. Covenant theology doesn't. And that's where some of these zany health, wealth, and prosperity ideas come from, not from covenant theology, but from this misinterpretation of taking what God promised Israel and saying all those promises are for the church. And I'm not saying that covenant theology does that. I'm saying that the health, wealth, and prosperity people are guilty of wrestling a promise God made to national Israel and saying it's for us today. So, Danny, I hope I said enough that I think that Acts 9, wherever it went, Acts 9, hyper-ultra-dispensationalism is artificial, and also I believe it's wrong. It's harmful to the church because it confuses people, even though men like Bullinger are phenomenally brilliant men. And so, good.